Nearly 40 years ago, Brad Childress arrived in Brew East Creek as part of Billy Lee's first recruiting class. The son of a college coach, Brad was a North Carolina East-West All-Star Game selection after graduating from Albemarle High School. Not only did he immediately move into the Camels starting lineup, but he led Campbell to the Big South title game twice during his career. He concluded his career as the first player in Campbell Division I history to record more than 1,000 points, 500 assists, and 200 steals. Brad followed his father into coaching at both his alma mater and Lenoir Ryan College before leaving the profession and moving into the pharmaceutical sales. In 2011, he was inducted into the Campbell Athletics Hall of Fame. My name is Stan Cole, class of 1987, and this is the next installment of Tales from the Creek, where we visit with the people who've made this place special over the years. I'm delighted to be joined today by former Campbell basketball standout and Hall of Fame member Brad Childress. Welcome to Tales from the Creek, Brad, and thanks for taking the time to visit with us.
Well, Stan, thank you for the opportunity. It's great to be back in Buies Creek.
Brad, let's just start at the beginning. Tell us about growing up as one of three sons of a basketball coach.
Yeah, so, that was a lot of fun, right? So we grew up in a place called Pfeiffer Place, and Dad was the head coach from 1970 to 1984. And, what was great about it, Stan, is he would just throw us the keys to the gym, and pretty much we had free reign of a college gymnasium to play against. You know, again, these are folks 4 or 5 years older than us, and you could pretty much just play pickup games and with your friends, with college students, anytime. Plus, I got to go on the recruiting road with him and see a different bunch of college campuses. That was also a lot of fun. So, it was a great environment. This was Pfeiffer College in Meisenheimer, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. So was Meisenheimer back in those days, was it similar to feel to Buies Creek?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yes. It was a small campus, smaller than Campbell, actually. Mm-hmm. Pfeiffer had maybe 1,000 students, whereas Campbell probably had, when I was here, 2 or 3 times that amount. Mm-hmm. But yes, it was a small atmosphere. Most people knew each other. You know, you had Pfeiffer. We did not even have one stoplight at the university. Whereas Campbell at the time had one, now there's roundabouts, et cetera. But a lot of commonalities.
How did you get started in organized sports? Was it always basketball, or did you play more sports than one?
It was pretty much basketball since the time Dad, I saw him with a whistle and had his team at the gymnasium. It was grabbing a ball, just dribbling. I did play baseball. In high school, of course, you did all that growing up, but in high school, I did play that for 2 years. Wasn't very good, sat the bench. So it was, mainly basketball. Never, not big enough to jump on the football field, other than Nerf at the bottom of the hill with all our friends, but mainly basketball. But,
2 brothers, Jeff and Paul, and you're in the middle, correct?
Correct.
Did that have anything to do with your competitive nature?
Yes. My older brother played high school sports as well. He gave it up later on, but he was my biggest fan, right? We fought all the time. However, he would pull for you when you're playing in the competitive environment. And my younger brother, Paul, I was 3 years older than him. So we were really competitive because we both liked basketball and both liked to compete in that space. And I was always a little bit stronger than him. So he had to find crafty ways to make up for that lack of strength. And I hope he hears this, Dan.
So back in the day when you're 10 years old or whoever, you're pretending you're some, I was Pete Maravich or Tate Armstrong who played at Duke, or downtown Freddie Brown of the Sonics in the driveway. Who were some of your heroes, Brad?
Yeah, other than being around the college players at Pfeiffer, thinking more on the collegiate and the pro circuit. And I know I listened to Brooks's podcast. I was also a fan of John Stockton. Just like the way he played, his grittiness, his smarts on the court. Larry Bird, there at the end of my high school career, he was also somebody that I looked up to quite a bit.
So growing up, you mentioned getting the behind the scenes look at college athletics with your dad. Were you the water boy or towel boy at home games or anything like that?
You know, our job was to, at halftime, was to go out and sweep the court. So we had the big, long mop. So we'd run out there and put a wet towel under it and get the court nice and clean for the second half. And we also had to clean up all the bleachers. And that was a pretty big task at the end of the game. But thank goodness we have about 15 of the Pfeiffer Place kids to all tackle those efforts. But we had a lot of duties as part of a college basketball family.
Were you able to jump on the van with the team or some for road games as well?
Yes, and that was, really enjoyed that aspect of it. It was two vans, right, at the Pfeiffer level, and usually the trips were less than 2 hours. So yes, we got to jump right in there with the players. This is when I was maybe 6, 7, 8, 9 years old. And I remember that distinctly, who I was sitting with for certain trips. And that was just very fond memories of those.
Brad, did that have any, you know, when you're thinking about, you grow up around college players and they were probably some of your idols. Did when you became a college athlete, did that influence the way you talked to the kids that happened to be around, or, you know, somebody like Brooks Lee, who was the son of your coach here, Billy Lee at Campbell?
Yes, I certainly kept that in mind about how I was treated and how they included me on road trips and opportunities like that. Yes, certainly. Brooks, yeah, I had opportunity to, he was so young, so I babysat him for many times. That certainly had a lot of influence on how I treated younger kids. Yep. And I didn't know, Stan, too, at the time, that when I was at Pfeiffer as a 9, 10, 11 year old, that when I see a college player, I was really, intimidated by that. So, It's didn't ever think I would get to play college, certainly Division I. So when I did, I tried to certainly keep that in mind about how to treat those teenagers or younger.
So I'm sure you grew up going to your dad's summer camps. Did dad work at Campbell? Did you ever get to go to the Campbell basketball school as a youngster?
Loved Campbell basketball school. I probably went at least 10 summers.
Wow.
Dad had the Lillington gym. He was the head coach at the Lillington gym, one of the hot ones, right? Some of them you had AC, some you didn't. But, those were really fond memories. Going to those three sessions a day, eating in Chouse, I can't remember.
Marshbanks
at the time. And just, you know, seeing all the players that put their time and energy and effort into making you better, all the coaches from across the state and then some. Some of those were friends to this day, actually.
Did any of the, you know, back in, that would have been back in the 70s and early 80s when you were attending camp, who were some of the names and the more visible names that worked at camp that you recall?
Let's see. That's a great question. I can tell you a lot more about the coaches. Now I can tell you the ACC players that used to come around too, because that was something Campbell had a connection there. The Kenny Denars, the Gene Banks, and then a little bit older, when I was just venturing into the college space, it was the Danny Ferries, Vinny Del Negro. But just, I think, you know, all the head coaches that were there from High Point. Of course, Coach Lee was at Pembroke at one point. The junior college coaches that just were very helpful for me as I went from the college playing circuit into the college coaching field.
When did you know, and when did you realize it was going to be a real possibility that you're going to be able to play college basketball?
You know, probably when I was a senior, not until that senior year. You know, Dad never took me aside and said, "Hey, you're pretty good, son. Mm-hmm. Keep it up if you want a college scholarship." It was never any of that talk. It wasn't until Coach John Lentz, who was the longtime coach at Lenoir Ryan and a big Campbell basketball employee or camp employee, mm-hmm. until he told me, he says, "Hey, Brad, you could play for me right now," because he took over my dad's spot when I was a junior in high school. And I just didn't believe him at the time, because I'm out there playing with college kids that weren't even on the basketball team and struggling to keep up, in my opinion. But obviously coaches see things a little bit differently. So that was one of the first times. I'm sure my dad believed in me, but he just never said, "Hey, you're ready right now to play at the next level."
What was your recruiting process like? What do you remember from that, Brad?
You know, one of the things, you know, this times have changed, right? I remember going to team camps. That was just when team camps were starting to pick up. So went to the Pfeiffer team camp, went to Catawba team camp. And as far as the individual camps, usually Lenoir Ryan and Campbell. So I remember going to, you may not remember this, the old Prep Stars was the one, I think, invitational camp that we had. That was at Elon College at the time. So there I got some college attention, which I thought was very exciting. And I did, you know, I didn't have a ton of choices coming out of high school to jump in. I would love to play in Division I. So it really came down to West Point, and it came down to Campbell University. Had a couple of folks that expressed interest, but not put an offer on the table.
How do you end up deciding on Campbell over an opportunity like the United States Military Academy?
Yes. I had my, the senator had signed off, and I had visited West Point. You know, I was a little bit concerned of the military commitment after your 4 years. I went to an Army-Naval lacrosse game on my official visit there, and it was rainy and dreary, and I just didn't think that was going to be the spot for me for 4 years. Great opportunity. But at the same time, Coach Lee and my dad knew each other. Coach mm-hmm. Lee being the head coach at Pembroke, dad being the head coach at Pfeiffer, so they competed against each other. And knew Coach Lee and knew Dad respected Coach Lee to a high level. And I'll never forget the recruiting visit that Coach Lee came to Pfeiffer. We didn't meet at our house in Richfield, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. We met at Pfeiffer. Coach Lee brought I'm pretty sure it was Coach Kirk Earlywine. It was Coach Ron Curtis. It was Coach Ron Levens. No. I think it was Coach Ron Levensy. They were all sitting across the table from my dad, mom, and I. And just really felt at home. And you could tell that they were very interested. They wanted me to be part of the program.
Well, certainly spending a couple weeks every summer for 10 years, you were quite familiar with Bowie's Creek and comfortable around here. It wasn't like they had to convince you this was a place you could get used to, right?
Yeah, because I'd spent a couple weeks of summer for the last, you know, 5 or 6 summers here.
Tell us a little bit about playing for Coach Lee. What did you learn from him, and what was that like?
Coach was big on, first of all, great, great experience for me. He, basically handed the ball to me as a freshman in college. And he said, hey, let's run the team. Help. Let's get this moving here. And it was just I couldn't have done that many other places. It just happened to be the setting was right. The opportunity was there. And I had great teammates, great coaches. Coach was, he focused on the offensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. He's written books before on that aspect. So just really a great offensive mind. But then on the same side of the ball, the defensive side, just learned such a great amount. One of the things I think back is I thought I had, he was a really good high school coach. Mm-hmm. Coach Dave Holcomb at Elmore High School. But we didn't do a whole lot of technical teaching, like 4 ways to come across a screen, right?
Right.
What are you looking at? Where's the defender and how you, little things like that. So it it made me a much better player under Coach Lee's tutelage.
What are some of your best memories from your college basketball career?
You know, Stan, it always starts with the teammates. Mm-hmm. Teammates, the friends around the basketball program here at Campbell University. We talked about how small of a setting it was, but the people you get to know, you're in the dorm, not just with athletes. Had a great roommate, Heath Van Dievener, great suite mates, Steve Bruce and Gary Elmore. Just the people here, part of the program, outside of the program, and I think the support too in the community. I mean, we had professors all right there at the mid-court cheering you on. And that's a really good feeling when you see them in class the next day and they congratulate you on your efforts.
Some big moments personally. You make the shot to beat UNCW down in down at the old Fayetteville arena there. Your freshman year, you're the point guard that leads the team to the Big South Final. where they played defending champion Charleston Southern, or now Baptist College, then now Charleston Southern University, and you made it back to a final again. What do you remember from some of those tournament runs?
Yeah, well, first of all, how much fun that was and how much energy there was in any type of tournament setting. Certainly in this Division I atmosphere, and as a freshman, that was a great opportunity for me to have an opportunity to have impact in getting us to that point. But I think back to my freshman year, the teammates that we had, Clarence Greer, Henry Wilson, we had some really, really good players. And so it was my responsibility to make sure I got the ball to them so they could utilize their talents.
One thing I remember about that Big South Championship game, I was there as a student, a student statistician or what have you. It was played in the old Savannah Civic Center, and Savannah had a CBA team, kind of a precursor to the G League or D League, whatever you want to call it, there that played there. And there was a couple of different 3-point lines there. And I still maintain to this day that you had your foot on a line when you made a 3-point shot and they called it a 2. And I looked down and I thought that was the CBA 3-point line, not the NCAA 3-point line, which would have been 19 feet, 9 inches at the time. And Baptist ends up winning 64-63. And I thought this game should be in overtime. I don't. And of course, there was no television coverage back then. There was no instant replay. You couldn't go to the videotape and check the thing. And I maintain to this day, the 1987 Big South championship game should have gone into overtime.
Well, I didn't realize that until you may have shared that with me before, but I didn't realize that until you just told me.
Some things just stick in your brain sometimes, and I might be wrong. You know, think your memory seems to cloud your judgment sometimes over 4 decades, but I just recall that as something that still stands out with me. Well, I don't lose sleep over at night, however, you know.
Well, and then you'd ask about the tournament runs, and then my junior year, again, really, really good talent. And UNC Asheville was just a little bit better than us, I think, that game anyway. So, yeah, had some really good opportunities. You know, 3 of the 4 years I was here, we had winning records, which I'm proud about.
You played with 3 of the better offensive players ever to play in Campbell history. Clarence Greer was a top 10 nation scorer your freshman year. Henry Wilson followed 2 years later, like Clarence, was named Big South Player of the Year. And then you got to play with Mark Mocnick,
yep,
who is one of the best 3-point shooters ever to play. What was it? You know, there's no surprise that you piled up a whole lot of assists while you were in your career with having guys like that to feed.
That's right. I was hoping you wouldn't say that, Stan. I was hoping that I created my own assists, but you're exactly right in that standpoint. I mean, Clarence Greer got drafted by the Rockets, I think, in the 7th round. But, you know, you get it to guys like that and good things happen. And that was – so in a way, that was such an easy position to be into. Now, we're still – and you know this, Stan, we're still trying to work on Clarence and Mocnick on their defense. I'm not sure they ever guarded anybody ever. But then you got Henry Wilson there in the middle, who was as good of big men in the Big South in my 4 years as there was. He could, in the post, go either way, long arms, could defend, block shot. So very fortunate to play with him.
How did growing up the son of a coach affect the way you played basketball?
I think one is you've got to have a good balance on wins and losses. I mean, yes, it hurts bad, but there's more to it. I saw Dad come home to a family, and yes, we watched the scores on TV. That's all we could watch back in the day if they beat Belmont Abbey or Catawba, and we were disappointed. But I think Dad realized when he came home, he needed to flip the switch, and he's a dad. And so I thought, you know, to me, to see that balance, take wins, losses with a grain of salt. You pour your heart into it, but don't let that rule your next day, I guess.
Coach Lee was famous for his homespun sayings, and he liked to give a lot of his players nicknames. And you were the original head on the giant, as Coach liked to describe. He described every single point guard that ever played for him, but you were the first head on the giant. What did that mean to you?
Well, to me, that gave me a lot of trust in what he felt like I was able to accomplish, not only from a getting the ball to the right people, but just an understanding of offenses and defenses, you know, what might work in a key situation. And that, I think, you know, came a lot as a result of being around hoops and my dad, other coaches for 10 years prior to my Campbell experience. But no, I took that as a huge compliment.
In 2008, Campbell moved into the beautiful John Pope Convocation Center, Gore Arena, 3,100 seats in there, not a bad one in the house, air conditioned, and plenty of elbow room and space in the locker rooms and stuff. For our listeners who don't really understand what it was like to play and practice in Carter Gym, share some of your most cherished or some of those memories that really stand out of that building that probably held about 900 people.
Well, at the time, if I'm not mistaken, it was the smallest Division I gym in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you, when nobody wanted to play us there,
right.
We had such a successful record at home because the fans were right on top of you. What I mean, right on top of you, I'm 10 feet away. And then, you know, then you had, as I mentioned earlier, the professors, the Jim McLaughlins, the Stan Laniers, the Dan Teets of the world that just were on top of the officials. It just seemed like such a cozy, comforting atmosphere when you come out of that locker room. And to your point, our locker room was probably 10 foot by 20. So, you know, it was a tight, everybody was right there together. Everybody comes out right on top of each other. And it's just a strong home court advantage that I really didn't feel anywhere else. Of course, I didn't play at Duke and other places like that, but just really grateful for that opportunity.
Brad, do you feel like you're close to your so many of your teammates and classmates because of the proximity, because you worked in tight spaces, because you went to school in a small town?
I think that had a lot to do with it. Absolutely. Then we had, you know, we roomed in the same little section together. Yeah, so everybody came to Campbell, you know, because it was that small environment. You had a great opportunity to showcase your basketball skills in a competitive league. Great education here at Campbell University, great professors. So all that fit into a wonderful environment for 4 years. And so much so, you know this, and we may get to this, as came back to coach a couple years.
Mm-hmm. During your seasons, your senior season, you got the chance to play against your brother, Paul, when he went to East Carolina. What was it like for the two of y'all to not only face each other's teams, but you guarded each other those two nights?
Yeah, now Paul was a freshman mm-hmm. at East Carolina, and he got to start as a freshman there, so that was a pretty good honor. And so I was a senior, so I'd kind of been through the gamut, played at East Carolina a couple times before that. So, but it was exciting, a little awkward at the same time. You want to see him do well against anybody but you and your team. But yeah, guarding him full court, coming up the court, him, me, the same. It was fun for my family. And so we still kind of talk about some of that to this day. They beat us that time we played there, but we beat them at home,
mm-hmm.
Cumberland County Arena. I think Paul played pretty well there. I just remember one thing, and I haven't even shared this with you. We had a center on our team, Mike Hall, mm-hmm. out of Virginia. Mike was a physical 6'8". Specimen, loved to set ball screens. Mm-hmm. So coming up the court, as I'm dribbling, I kind of let my brother know, Paul's here it comes. So he was at least, he didn't crash into it. He hit it, but not as hard as otherwise he would have hit that ball screen.
So Mike Hall was about, he was probably listed 230, but 6'8". It probably felt like you were running into a block of concrete. He's from Stuart, Virginia, up in the mountains. He was a big, solid fella. And, as I recall, Mike, now this has been many moons ago, probably 36, 37 years ago, he probably got a little bit of delight out of putting another guard on his notch of guys who have crumbled into him when he was setting a screen.
Absolutely. The only reason I gave Paul a heads up on that specific play is because Mike came up to me but the play before, and he said, "Bring him into me." And so, and that was just typical Mike. He sought contact, right? But yeah, we enjoyed. Thanks for asking that question. It was good. We still talk about it to this day, and I think we shared this earlier. I don't remember my stats on that game, Dan. Oh yes, I do. I had 6 steals that day.
Do you? And how often do you remind Paul of that?
You know, it's been a while. He's due. He's due for that.
And if you know, something I hadn't thought about Mike Hall for a long time is, I believe I'd have to go check the box scores, but I believe one time he fouled out all 5 fouls in 4 minutes. Now, that probably had something to do with getting into foul trouble early, and then maybe at the end he was the guy that was the hack-a-shack. You were trying to put somebody on the line and come back. But I'll never forget our radio guy, Ron McClam, getting the stat sheet after the game and says, "How do you foul out in 4 minutes?" And that is the one thing I always thought about Mike Hall in his couple years here before he transferred down to St. Andrews. And now I've got him trying to set a screen against your brother in my memories now.
Well, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He was a freshman when I played with him, so he probably worked his way around having, you know, don't foul right in front of the officials. But, and you brought up Coach Lee's quotes earlier. I remember him telling Mike Hall that he couldn't jump up and squash a grape. Mm-hmm. And I remember, "Mike, you look like you're running towing a truck."
Our guest today on Tales from the Creek is former Campbell basketball standout and Hall of Fame member Brad Childress. Brad, you and Paul are in the middle of 3 generations of Childress basketball players who competed in the North Carolina East-West All-Star Game. Your dad, Tom, represented Mount Airy High School, while you and Paul graduated from Albemarle. And then Paul's son, Bryson, just a few years ago played in the game. What did that mean to you to play in the North Carolina Coaches Association East-West All-Star Game and to have that family lineage as well?
That's a great question. Thanks for bringing that one up. Yeah, it was a Greensboro newspaper did an article on that, took a picture and put it in the paper. And so that was, it's unusual, right? I don't know if that many has played on one team before. We were all on the West team. We kid each other on who had the most points. I had 8 points. Mm-hmm. I think Bryson had 12. Mm-hmm. Paul and Dad, not so much. So we give them a hard time about we did lose our game. I think Paul won their game. But that was, at the time, it was the top 20 players in the state of North Carolina. Now you got invitationals, and some of that's changed on the player selection. But it's quite an honor, certainly back 20-some years ago, certainly an honor.
What was it like growing up? You know, you go to camp at Campbell where, you know, it's Carter Gym. You grow the Pfeiffer's Gym is, you know, similar in size and stature, a little small college, non-D1 gyms. And then you go set foot in the Greensboro Coliseum, which in the 70s, people forget sometimes the ACC tournament was there every year. The Big Four tournament was there every year for 10 years. The NCAA tournament, when NC State cut down the nets in 1974, David Thompson, you know, played in there. That's where Campbell played Duke in the big dance in 92. The Greensboro Coliseum is kind of one of those college basketball off-campus cathedrals. What was that like to be able to play there?
Yeah, you know, certainly in high school, that was a big deal. I remember distinctly in warmups just hitting the side of the backboard in just a 15-foot jumper. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, that's not good. That's not good for the confidence heading into the start of this game. But I just remember that going, I don't think I've ever hit the side of a backboard at a normal bank shot angle. So to your point, it's different, right? It's, you don't have that background, but a lot of fun to play in. Had the opportunity to play. We played at Wake Forest and other places that had those style of atmosphere.
More of an arena. The depth is the rim looks smaller.
Yeah.
A lot of people said that there were some players that like to come in and play from other teams like to play at Carter Gym because it made the rim look larger because it was such a small atmosphere. But the adjustment from small to large had to be more difficult than large to small.
Yeah, I think so. You go back to, fortunately, we were able to have lunch with the new head coach here, and I'm thinking about his Florida team last year, that huge Final Four facility. you just toss that ball up and, you know, that basket just seems so isolated in that big atmosphere.
Brad, you not only got to attend Campbell as a kid, then you had two more stages of the Campbell basketball camp where you were a student counselor and then one of the coaches who helped run the operation. What was that like, those three different phases for you?
Yeah, loved it as a camper, loved it in all three areas. You know, being a student here at Campbell and having the opportunity to see all the campers at the time, 900 kids per week, largest basketball camp in the country, thanks to Bones McKinney and Kozny Call and others. But, you know, the biggest thing there as a student athlete at Campbell, you got to participate in the evening, in the night games, right? And you had all the 900 campers in there in a hot sweat box, playing against the likes of Vinny Del Negro, Chris Corciani, you know, I can't even name them all, but just the competitive level and just the excitement, it made us better, certainly as a Campbell basketball player and those opportunities. And then as a coach, that's a hard camp to work because I came back too after Campbell coaching, but as a coach here at Campbell, you had your walkie-talkies, you know, Coach Cliff Dillard, Coach Gary Elmore, Joel Haskins. You walk around making sure those 900 kids are safe, having a great time. And that's a full-time 24-hour job. There's a lot to it. Not only, and then getting all the buses, you know, to the appropriate spots.
Being the Secretary of Transportation to send these kids out to South Johnston High School or Johnsonville or Boone Trail or some of these old schools all around the county, the coordination, I don't think people can really understand, or people of a certain age. There's a lot of people who really know. Because you're the guys that had to go pick up all the activity buses from these places and drive them back and forth across the county.
Yeah, and not to mention you've got 150 counselors that you're organizing. Where are they going and when? And it's quite an operation that was created. It was an honor to be a part of that.
Your family and my family both have a connection with Sam Moyer. Sam, of course, is a North Carolina Sports Hall of Fame inductee. Your dad played for him at Mount Airy and then at Catawba. My dad used to go jogging with Coach Moyer when my dad was a pastor in Salisbury back in the 70s. What do you remember about Coach Moyer?
I remember his loyalty and his friendship with my dad, first and foremost. I was fortunate enough to be recruited by him in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another place I seriously considered, mainly because of that tradition, Coach Moyer, and then my dad played there. But, you know, and dad, during his coaching days, Coach Moyer, you know, they had such a great relationship, but they were the top two or three teams in that conference, just went at each other, you know, very high stakes games, both in Meisenheimer and in Salisbury. But they continued to stay friends after they got out of the coaching circuit. So I think that was the biggest part. It's all about wins and losses are fun and bad, but it's all about the relationships.
I've got two Coach Moyer distinct memories that you would have as a 10-year-old or something like that. I can remember he and my dad jogging around the cinder track at Catawba College, Coach with a big old chaw of tobacco in his mouth, running in old low-cut Converse Chuck Taylor. This is right before, you know, the running boom started out with all the Nike trainers and all this kind of stuff. They run around in basketball shoes. And the other one is that when I was an elementary school student, we'd go to Coach Moyer's camp at Catawba. He would tell all the campers, now you don't need to go to Campbell to basketball camp. And I had no idea anything about the Campbell basketball school at that time. He says, it's too big. You don't get any individual attention. Well, what do you know? You know, 10 years later or so, or 15 years later, I take the job here at Campbell and I start going through some of the old staff photos from the basketball school, and whose face is right there, right in the middle, next to Press Maravich and John Wood and all that, but Sam Moyer. So I always got a chuckle out of that.
He did so much for the Carolina's conference back in the day, but for, as you said, Hall of Fame in the state of North Carolina, just a tremendous individual.
How often do you get to reminisce about the good old days with your friends and stuff? You know, or how you know, do you get a chance to visit with some of your former teammates and stuff on a regular basis?
Yeah, we do a pretty good job of staying in touch. We could do a lot better. We did go on a golf tour or a golf outing. It's been 3 or 4 years ago. Coach Lee actually met us. This is in Myrtle Beach, and we had about 10 of us.
Oh, wow.
Together. Cliff Dillard organized that, and so that was a lot of fun. Stay in touch with Chris Spring some. He's in Florida as a basketball coach at a community college there. Done a nice job, but we certainly need to do that more. Certainly, maybe even coming back to the creek for games as a group.
Brad, after graduation, you went into the coaching career. Was that something you thought, you know, growing up, man, I'm going to be a coach like my dad? Was that the path? Tell us a little bit about Campbell, and then you were at Lenoir Ryan with Coach Lentz as well.
Yep, that was what I wanted to do. I'd been in basketball and gymnasiums for the last 20 years. And so, yeah, I thought that was going to be the path for me. So I spent 2 years, Coach John Lentz, all the relationships that developed. Of course, my dad hired him at Pfeiffer College, and then he went to Lenoir Ryan from Pfeiffer. So I did my graduate studies there with him, a 2-year GA job, got a master's in counseling education there. So, and then I went 1 year to Belmont Abbey after that as the full-time assistant coach, still thinking, yes, this is the route I want to take. And then Coach Lee was kind enough to pull me back in the 93-94 year, and what a year that was. So really, really tremendous players, Joe Spinks, Dan Pogue, Neely, you name it. Hurst, I can't remember his first name. Dennis. Yeah, Dennis. But just, you know, that opportunity, that was what back in the day that we had the restricted earnings. And so it really wasn't enough to sustain me financially. So I took a job 1 year in high school as a JV coach. And then Coach Lee hired me back, again, very grateful for that, as a full-time assistant for two more years.
That 93-94 team, Joe Spinks' senior year, he would be named a Big South Player of the Year. Campbell's first ever wins over power conference opponents in NC State and South Carolina. Got to the final for the 8th time, I believe, or the 4th time in 7 years of the Big South, and just ran into a buzzsaw that was Liberty that season. What do you remember distinctly from that year, Brad?
Yeah, I just remember how well those guys gelled together. They each knew their role, and they did it well. You know, the best point guard, Dan Pogue. I mean, couldn't shoot in the ocean, standing 5 feet away. But he may be the all-time assist leader to this day. Just competitive 6-1 fire. And then you had Joe Spinks, as you mentioned, his accolades. The best player, in my opinion, I wasn't here as much for Chris Clemens, but from an all-around shooter, rebounder, passer, competitor, you know, Joe Spinks, second to none. And then he had all the support players. But it was an exciting team to be a part of. Coach Lee, Joel Gary, and myself were fond memories. And I've got a great story about that Liberty game since you brought up, if you want me to share.
Please do. Anyway.
We're down 20 at half, if you said. We ran into a juggernaut. That was Jerry Falwell's team. Falwell sitting right behind Liberty bench at the time. And we're predicted to win that game, if I remember right. They're lights out. And we go in at halftime, and Coach Lee is first in the locker room, and I'm right behind him. We're 20 feet in front of the team. They have no idea what's going on in the locker room. Coach Lee walks by the trash can, picks it up, and I realize he just picked it up just to see how heavy it was. And so when the team got in there, everybody came accumulated in, Coach Lee went right to that trash can, picked it up, threw it across the room to get everybody's attention in order to deliver an effective message that second half. What he was doing, Stan, was he was over there seeing how heavy it was. He didn't want to get embarrassed by trying to pick it up and throw it. He couldn't pick it up. But, you know, his tutelage at halftime, we came back. If I'm not mistaken, we made that a game. I think we tied it up. Came close.
It was, yeah, they cut it to single digits at least. And they had Julius Nwosu, who went on to play in the NBA, the big center. And they had a couple of guards that were so good at the time. And, they really, that team, Also benefited from the fact that President Falwell financed a whole bunch of their students to go. That. They got to skip class the next day if they went to the Big South tournament, and he had several busloads, and they ended up having several thousand fans show up in that big North Charleston Coliseum, which probably sat about 10,000 people. Yep. And you go from there being about 500 or 600 folks in there 20 minutes before the game, and then you come back out and all those people had shown up when y'all came back out from going in for the last time, and then there they are, and they kind of jumped on the camels with both feet that day.
It's like a home atmosphere for them.
Well, and it was, you know, we can always look back at 92, 2 years ago, 2 years before, when the Camels beat Liberty in the semifinals on the way to beating Charleston Southern in the final to make an NCAA tournament. So it made it, you know, a little bit bearable, but, you know, the reaction after that, thinking that that was going to be the year, and Campbell was playing really well down the stretch, and the thought around the program was, hey, we're going to make it back to the NCAA tournament for the second time in 3 years, but it just wasn't to be that day. Brad, what was the best part to you about being a college basketball coach?
I think the opportunity to you know, you have 17-year-olds coming at you wide-eyed, open, a new facility, new place, new school, new people, that you have an opportunity to influence the direction, you know, certainly what their first few years of being away from home is like. So no question, I think that opportunity and the relationships that were built at that time genuinely was the best part about it. That, along with the relationships with all the people you work with, and not only in the basketball program, but outside the program.
You left the coaching profession. Tell us a little bit about that. But you were able to stay in the game a bit from behind the microphone. Share with us a little bit about your transition out of coaching into the professional, different professional world.
Yeah, so I had and again, this all roads lead back to the creek. I think I've heard that say many, many a time. So, you know, I had let Coach Lee and others know, hey, I'm thinking about making a transition out of coaching at this point in my career. I've been coaching for 7 years now, and I didn't have the same fire as I did as a player. It was mm-hmm. different. So at the time, I went to Dr. Dan Teat, who at their pharmacy school, who we took many of our potential recruits to see, and he would do the fabulous sales job that only he could do. To appropriately put Campbell out there in all the positive light that it should be portrayed as. And he said, you know what, Brad, let me connect you with one of a friend of mine who is a Campbell graduate who is in the pharmaceutical industry. Mm-hmm. His name was Jim Edwards. And so he connected me. I met with Jim Edwards. He didn't have anything open at the time with Pfizer. So he put me in touch with one of his colleagues, another district manager, and he did. But so, again, Dan Teat lit the fire to get that going. Obviously said some encouraging things to Jim, and Jim portrayed that to Mark. And that was 1998. So 27 years later, here I'm sitting in front of you. So if you think about it, Campbell had a direct influence on my life, not from 4 years of playing, 3 years coaching, but also 27 years in the industry, you know. Or else I most likely wouldn't be where I am today, certainly with a company that I enjoy working with, Pfizer.
And you were based in the Charlotte area at the time, and you got a chance to be a part of something kind of really special to watch that was growing over at Davidson College.
That's correct. Yeah, so Matt Matheny and I were good friends. Matt was the assistant at Davidson. Of course, all the assistant coaches were on the recruiting circuits together. So he reached out and he said, hey, Brad, would you be interested in doing our radio? Now, this was the color, not the play-by-play, mm-hmm. which is a lot easier for those folks that have done that. So I said, you know what, Matt, that would be fun. You get to stay in it. Don't have to watch game tape, yell and scream at officials. You can just go watch games, provide some insights, and just enjoy being around the sport. So I ended up doing that for 7 years while working full-time at Pfizer's. That was just, you know, of course, in the evenings. In that conference, Southern Conference, Charleston, Western Carolina, Georgia Southern, ETSU. So a lot of the places were drivable.
While you were at Davidson, you got the chance to see a pretty good big man there in Landry Kosmalski. And full circle, all roads lead to Buies Creek. you got to spend some time with him as well in a visit to campus today. Tell us a little bit about Landry as a player, and then your impressions of him, and then Coach John Andershek and the new staff that you've been able to make.
Yes, happy to. So when I was at Davidson helping with their radio, this is like 98, 99. Landry was, I want to say, freshman or sophomore, maybe mm-hmm. maybe a little bit more advanced. But one of the better big men that I had seen up close. Mm-hmm. His skill set was above his competitors. I mean, go either way inside, but he could also step out and shoot the three, like many of Coach McKillop's players he sought to have them do. But just hard-nosed, knew the game. Of course, you know, his dad played in the NBA, so he had a lot of the cerebral knowledge of how to be very successful at the collegiate level. And it was great today, thanks to you, Stan, to reconnect to us with the new head coach. Really enjoyed meeting John. And, you know, just sitting down talking to him about his thought processes. Really excited the second day of practice today. Just excited about the potential that of his leadership.
What does that mean to you as an alumni? You know, you've got a lot of stakes in this game here at Campbell. You know, you've been around this campus for most of your life, and you put a lot of sweat and into that. I believe it was 97 games that you played for the Camels, and then. Coaching here, what is it about the staff that you saw today that has you hopeful for the future?
Well, I think he's got has got a good mind for the game, and I think he's got a great, and again, this is a short time I've met with him, right? So I'm making some assumptions, but that personality, from what I took, he's got a great perspective on what's most important. One of the things he brought up initially, hey, we've got really good kids here in this program. I mean, we got a 3.2, 3.3 GPA. Things that are very, very important in a place like Campbell University. And the other thing I asked him, if you remember, I asked him about, you know, how's the community involvement? How's the support? And he's out there, right? You've done your tours, so he understands the importance of that. I think he was in the state of Washington, so it's very a common theme, which you need to do. He enjoys doing that, pulling people together to get behind the program. So I'm really excited about the season. I know he's got a tough road right out of the gate, five big Division I games, and but I'm excited about it.
Share us a little bit about your family, Brad. I know everybody likes to proud papa and everything.
Yep. So, and I'll start by this, because going back to Coach, I texted him. My daughter is Tatum. His daughter is a sophomore at University of Florida. And so I'm thinking, you know what? Let me reach out to Coach and see if he'll connect me with his former colleagues to see if he'll provide a tour of University of Florida, the gym. Sure enough, texted one of the assistant coaches, takes us on a tour, gives us a great opportunity there to hold the championship trophy and all this kind of stuff. So that was a lot of fun. So I appreciate that, first and foremost. That's Tatum. She's a sophomore at University of Florida. Deciding on what she wants to major, either accounting or engineering, still trying to figure that out. Having a good semester so far. I have twin boys that are juniors in high school at Calvary Day in Winston-Salem, and they're both on the cross-country team, having a really good season. And my wife, Anna. Anna is with a smaller company called Ipsen Oncology, and she's been very, very supportive in my career. And we dated when I was doing the radio show, and she was very supportive in that aspect. So I knew she was a keeper.
Brad, back in 2011, I can't believe it's been that long. You and Denise Ford, who you all were in school together. Denise was the MVP of the 89 Big South Women's Tournament. Y'all are inducted to the Campbell Athletics Hall of Fame. What does that mean to you?
You know, when you called me, Stan, I still remember driving down Interstate 40, where I was, because it didn't even cross my mind that I would be considered for the Campbell Hall, Sports Hall of Fame, because I knew some of the folks that were in there. So seriously, when you called me, I'm like, are you serious? It was just such encouraging news. So glad to be a part of that that strong group. Going in there with Denise, I remember her work ethic when I played here. She was one or two years ahead of me. Tremendous player, tremendous rebounder. So it was an honor to go in with her. And to have Coach Lee provided the opening comments, which is always entertaining and just very just supportive, that the words that he gave me.
I like to ask this of folks who've been there before. You, of course, have the knowledge not only as a former college athlete but a college coach. Now you're a parent of college students and perhaps college-bound athletes. What kind of advice would you give to an incoming freshman, whether they're involved in athletics or not, or any college incoming freshman?
I would say, go if you're going to pursue, let's say a scholarship, or you're going to, whether it be D2 or D1, choose the place that fits you not only as an athlete, but also as a person, as a student. And for me, that was Campbell University without question. I'm trying to tell that to my son. Just go somewhere where they really want you to be there. Not that you're fortunate that, you have that opportunity. But yeah, where they truly want you, what efforts have they done? What have they showed to prove that to you? So I think that's the biggest thing. It's not all about a certain level that you play. Go in with the proper perspective that you're going to be a great student, because most likely you're not going to continue sports after your 4 years, just to try to keep that all in perspective.
Finally, Brad, can you put into words how Campbell University and the Buies Creek community have impacted your life?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, it's right at close to 40 years where Campbell's had an influence in the direction of my life. And thank goodness, I just feel really blessed. Thank the good Lord that Coach Lee gave me the opportunity to play at this level, at this school. And then the friendships that I made here and continue to have as a part of being a student body here at Campbell University. And to this day, I've got customers that went to school here and have fond memories, especially through the pharmacy here, right? The law school here, business school, you name it. So the tentacles that started here for me back in 1986 have continued to grow and strengthen. I'm very grateful for that.
I'm Stan Cole, and our guest today on Tales from the Creek has been Campbell basketball standout and Hall of Fame member Brad Childress. Thank you, Brad, for sharing your Tales from the Creek.
Really appreciate it, Stan.